Good morning, 740 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Someone is telling me that they're actually watching the State Ethics and Elections Committee hearing and the Senate in Tallahassee. This is the one to confirm all the appointments to UWF. And I had missed that apparently Joel Rudman is also on this list as well. Oh, no, there it is, right above that. Andrew Hobbs, who, of course, chief deputy for the Central, or for the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, Ed Fleming and Zach Smith. Apparently Joel Rudman has resigned, is what this person is telling me. I am telling you what someone has told me that I consider reliable. I have not seen it for myself, but if that's true, interesting development. Of course, he was unanimously rejected by the former Senate committee, so not a surprise particularly, but to have that happen in real time, it's fascinating. And of course, they're going to talk about the UWF ones as well. We'll report on that tomorrow. For now, we have Sheriff Chip Simmons, who is here in studio with me. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great, as always. You had a shooting over the weekend. One man was killed, and I think you've now made an arrest in the case. This was at a, what do you call it, like an event space on Delano, is that right?
Okay. That's correct, 850 event space. And well, it's actually at a roadway right in front of that.
Okay, so that's the location, but not at the place. It was kind of outside or off-premise. So what happened here?
Well, I think the best place to start is the beginning. So on the 17th, the victim, who we don't typically identify victims, but the victim in this case was involved in a domestic situation with his ex-girlfriend. So the victim's involved. He was not present when we get there, but we do establish probable cause to believe that he committed domestic violence. So we initiate an affidavit. We start to work on getting that arrest report for him. Then the weekend takes place, and on what I believe it's the 19th, the victim and the victim of domestic violence, his sister, was also there.
Okay.
The brother of the domestic violence sister. So her brother was around, and they get into a little bit of an altercation inside, a verbal altercation inside. And then sometime later on, the ultimate victim in this case, he walks outside in the middle of the road. He gets shot at twice. I think he's hit once in the head, and he dies at the scene. So the victim of domestic violence's brother is charged, and his name is Jaylynn, J-E-H-L-Y-N-N, Woods, 24-year-old, and he's charged with that murder.
And you have him in custody, right?
Yes, he is in custody, and we initially put two more people that we felt like were witnesses in the case.
Yeah.
We have since spoken to both of them, and we are no longer looking for anyone else, and the case is pretty much closed. We got to tie up some loose ends, and we'll pretty much be finished with this one.
And so it sounds like in this case, which I note only because it's a little different, is you seem to have gotten a fair amount of cooperation from witnesses, and that's good news, right? I mean, the event itself is horrible news, but the fact that the observers were cooperating was good news, right?
Yes, we did. We got some information. We did a lot of work. Over the weekend, we had a number of our homicide investigators out. They worked pretty much around the clock getting the information we needed, because the first 24, 48 hours are very important. So we were able to get some video from the areas, put everything together, and then ascertain exactly who did the crime. And again, we were able to make an arrest pretty relatively short order. So again, credit goes to our investigators, in this particular case. And
great, great. Well, that's, I mean, like I said, bad news, but you guys did your job, did the good news. You guys have a drug house that you shut down. I don't think it's a bulldozer one, but it's one where you put a sign up in front that the drug house is closed, right?
Yeah. As we talk a lot about our narcotics investigations in Escambia County, I think it's important to note that any of our deputies, any sworn deputy can make a drug arrest, and we do. Our patrol deputies get out there and make drug arrests. Our canine, units make drug arrests. Because we have a priority on fentanyl specifically, but drugs, and because drugs lead to violent crime, I have pretty much doubled the size of our narcotics unit. So our narcotics unit not only works with our federal agencies on task forces, but they also work on their own in neighborhood, what they call nuisance type homes.
Okay.
And one of those was on 800 block of Rumack Street, and what you'll see on our social media platforms from the 15th. Is that we served a search warrant. We arrested two people, an Ashley Long and a Dermichael Turner. We were able to get 28 grams of meth, a little bit of cocaine, two firearms, and a stolen vehicle was also recovered from the scene. You can see the pictures there. We put this sign up just to let the neighborhood know that your complaints have been heard,
yeah,
and that we are there to make those arrests. There's also a picture of some of the stuff that we seized from the house. I'm not making this out to be a drug kingpin. What I'm trying to show you is that this was a drug house, a house obviously used to, it looks to me like to sell. This looks a little bit more than personal use. Again, there's the cocaine, there's a couple of the handguns, and there's some pictures of the fine folks that were arrested on this particular case.
And it's always good because the neighbors know, and the neighbors complain, and then you guys have to take your time, build your case, do your surveillance, do all the stuff mm-hmm. that you do. And then, as I got to join the narcotics team on a warrant service,
right.
It's a process, and sometimes you strike gold and sometimes you strike copper, sometimes you strike tin, you have to work the process, right?
Well, again, if you're in this neighborhood and you see this house and you see the traffic, and you think something's not right there. And if you let Crime Stoppers know, they put that information together. And then our narcotics unit will take a look at it. And as you mentioned, it's a process. Sometimes it takes days. Sometimes it takes weeks. Sometimes we're not able to establish probable cause for a search warrant.
Right.
Sometimes we put that in the back burner, and when it comes back up again, there might be some more information. So we talked a little bit before. I don't know what number it is, but we're in the 60s regarding search warrants over the past year. And again, some of those are, as I've shown, and press conferences and just different press releases that some of those are huge. Some of those are enough fentanyl to kill 100,000 people, but some of those are the houses that are devastating local neighborhoods. And I'm gonna be honest, it feels good to kick that door in to let people know that hey, we heard you and we're finally able to do this. And we put that sign out there to aggravate them a little bit.
I love it. Speaking of drug arrests, you had a case that you guys were involved with maybe a year or so ago that we had talked about that now has turned into a DEA task force case. But tell us, what was the background here and then what's happened?
Well, if you remember about 6 weeks ago or so, I don't know the exact date, but we were involved in a task force.
Oh, more recent
force.
Than a year. My fault. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. It just happened a couple months ago. So we were involved with a task force investigation. As I mentioned, we do our own drug cases, but we also have membership on various task forces. One of those task forces was serving a search warrant, and the bad guy, I don't recall his name, but he was inside and he fired a couple of shots, apparently out the door at the agents that were outside. So he gets into a car, he takes off, we do a pit maneuver, stop him, he gets out on foot, tries to run. There was a video, someone took a little Facebook video, and we end up tasing him, putting him in jail, and that sort of thing. So
yeah.
Ultimately, he, because this was began and ended really as a federal investigation, they have their own process, and so
sure.
There's now an indictment for that allegedly firing in at a DEA agent.
An attempted murder of a DEA agent, right?
Yeah. So again, that's hopefully he'll be in jail for a long time. We won't have to worry about that type of nonsense anymore.
You guys have a Female Blazer Academy class tonight. That's the fourth group of women going through this. Is that right?
This is the fourth Female Academy, and we're actually on our fourth night.
Oh, so it's four for four. Okay, all right. Either way.
Yeah, 4-4. So it's going very well. It's a good group, good group of young ladies that I was there for the first week, and then I missed a week, so I'll be there again tonight. Not really doing much because it's females,
sure.
Female Blazer Academy. We have.
I assume the mentors are all female officers.
Yes, yes. Well, we have some people coming in, some guest speakers.
Like speakers
coming
and
in,
whatnot.
Not all.
But
female,
the primary, like one-on-one, is
yes.
the females, right?
Yeah, that by design.
Of course,
the males typically teach the male groups. And the females typically teach the female groups. Not that there's anything really secret about it. It's just a comfort level and a shared experience type of thing that we have. With a
men family. Raise boys and women raise girls. I mean, this is, in my opinion, this is a no-brainer. But also, I wonder how much to the female, I know how much the male officers love the opportunity to help, raise the men. I assume the female officers are the same. It's just like they love it. They love doing it.
There is certainly a value. I can see it in your eyes when they're teaching the group and when you're engaging. It's like being I imagine like being a teacher.
Yeah.
And I taught for a little bit at Pensacola State College back in the day. So when you feel like you're really making an impact, you feel like you're hitting on all cylinders there. It makes you feel good, like you're doing something that has a lasting effect. So it's the entire Blazer Academy programs, both the male and the female, are just that, and you can see it in the graduation and as I mentioned before, we're also even having an alumni mail class coming up in a month or so.
And, you know, it's funny, I had not thought about it that way, but a lot of times as a cop, you know you're doing good, you're solving bad things or preventing bad things, but you don't always get that positive, real, like, I mean, being a teacher myself, I know that's very rewarding to see people in the eye and see that you're making a difference in their lives. And so that's a way of, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it, you're giving them, not just the women or the boys, but you're giving the adults, the mentors, a positive thing too in their job, the feeling of making a difference and preventing crime and helping people's lives. I mean, it's all around. It's good for everybody.
Well, it's like the way I figure it, it's like the motivational speakers. When they're doing research, they're getting motivation themselves. And if it applies to them, typically they can regurgitate that, or they can push that towards whoever's listening to whatever they're saying. I think if you look at all of the great leaders of the world, whether it's a football, Nick Saban's of the world, or whoever your heroes may be, I think you'll find that they do a lot of reading.
Yeah.
I think that they do a lot of studying, and it's one thing to share your experience. It's another thing to borrow upon what you've learned from your own mentor. So I think that's kind of where we're going with the Blazer Academy. That was the design all along. And it has, you know, while we maintain flexibility, it's remained consistent with, hey, this is where we're going to be in a community. These are our future leaders, and what would you like to have told them, or been told as an early teen?
No, that's great. What did you teach at PSC, or was it PJC back in the day?
Criminal law.
Okay, all right, makes sense. Seems relevant to your your job experience.
Depends on who you talk to.
Hey, last thing, I just didn't want to go without mentioning it. Last week was the National Safety Telecommunicators Week, which we just say dispatchers. I don't know why we've got to replace one good word with four long, bland words, but okay. These folks you can't say it strongly enough, the significance of what they do and the difficulty of what they do.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, anyone that's spent any time in law enforcement, or I'd imagine any public safety type sector, to know that you have that, what I'll call a lifeline. When I was a police officer, the one thing you made sure that, so oftentimes you're by yourself. And when you initiate a traffic stop, you get out with a suspicious person, you are by yourself. The only thing that you can do, your only lifeline is to call dispatch and tell them where you're at and what you're doing. And many times they can tell by your voice they'll go and dispatch a backup before you ask for a backup, or they'll remember to check on you every once in a while. They'll do what we call a 10-4 check every couple of seconds, because they understand what situation is going on. And to know that they're doing this throughout the entire county. Mm-hmm. If you go to our dispatcher communication center, then you'll see they have, you know, four or five large screens right in front of them at any given time. There's a map on one, there's a CAD screen on another. And they kind of they keep all that in order, and then every once in a while I look back and they'll say, okay, are you 10-4, or you remember to do. A lot of times they remind us to do what we should be doing. Shouldn't you be what we call code this call out so you can get to the next one, you know? Or and then they determine typically who's closest to a call. Now computers are changing things a little bit with GPS and stuff, that it's easier to know. But a lot of times they'll say, hey, you go. No, you don't need to go. I got another call for you. You can go. But to know that they can do this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is just incredible to me. It's a job that I could not do.
It is very psychologically demanding. It takes a special set of skills and capabilities, calm under pressure, all of the things. And I mean, I don't say this as any kind of a, this is going to sound like, but I, you know, they are literally the God operating the system. It's the way I think of it. They're the voice of reassurance. They're the voice of comfort and safety. You know that they're there, whether you're calling in as an individual or whether you're an officer, depending on them sending you backup or anything. It's a lot of responsibility on those shoulders.
So let me age myself a little bit. When I first started at the Pensacola Police Department, we had our dispatch center right next to the front desk or desk sergeant. And that was before you had to be a certified telecommunicator or communicate the dispatcher. Part of the training would be to sit in on the console and dispatch calls.
Yeah.
And you really learn a great appreciation for what's going on. And if you talk to any law enforcement officer, they will be the first to say, hey, we certainly couldn't do our job without the dispatchers. And if you really want to know how important they are, let the dispatch console go out for a short period of time.
Yeah.
And find us trying to go back and go old school.
Absolutely. Sheriff Chip Simmons, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for keeping us safe, keeping us informed, and we'll look forward to and even raising the next generation of good citizens with the Blazer Academies. I love that program. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.